Beethoven's name resonates through history with a power few artists have achieved. Just 1 year after his death in 1827, plans for a monument at his birthplace in Bonn marked an unprecedented honor. Musical luminaries, including Chopin and Liszt, performed special fundraising concerts. Liszt even emerged from retirement to support the cause. When the monument was finally unveiled in 1845 during a lavish 3-day Beethoven fest, it celebrated not just a composer, but a cultural icon whose influence had already transcended music itself. Today, Beethoven's presence remains inescapable. Those first 4 notes of the Fifth Symphony, perhaps the most recognizable musical motif ever created, appear everywhere from concert halls to film scores, ringtones to political rallies. Even people who've never attended a classical concert instantly recognize his scowling visage with that wild, untamed hair. He's transformed from mere composer to a symbol of artistic genius, revolutionary spirit, and the triumphs of human will over crushing adversity. His music has accompanied revolutions, comforted royalty, and bridges high art and popular culture in ways almost no other classical composer has achieved. Beethoven's journey from abused child prodigy to revolutionary musical titan embodies the ultimate artistic triumph over adversity. His progressive hearing loss, beginning in his 20s and culminating in total deafness, would have ended most musical careers. Instead, it drove him deeper into his own creative world, producing works of unprecedented emotional depth and structural innovation. His famous Heiligenstadt Testament reveals his contemplation of suicide before resolving to live for his art. I would have ended my life. It was only my art that held me back. Beethoven's childhood was dominated by his alcoholic father, Johann, who, inspired by Mozart's success, tried to create a child prodigy through abuse and relentless practice, even waking Ludwig to perform for drinking companions. Teacher Christian Gottlob Neefe provided crucial support, offering musical education and introducing Beethoven to Enlightenment ethics. Moving to Vienna in 1792 to study with Haydn marked a turning point. When Haydn occupied Bonn in 1794, the court disbanded, ending Beethoven's stipend. This archetypically German musician would spend his remaining life abroad, a fact often overlooked by nationalist claims. In Vienna, Beethoven displayed remarkable business acumen. His choice of piano trios for Opus 1 demonstrated mastery of Viennese style while avoiding direct competition with Mozart and Haydn's quartets. When Haydn criticized the third trio as too experimental, Beethoven was furious, though his later dedication of Piano Sonatas Op. 2 to Haydn suggested acknowledgement of the older master's influence. The septet, Op. 20, premiered at Beethoven's first Academia in April 1800, became his most performed work during his lifetime. This accessible chamber piece captivated audiences with its taste and feeling, combining melodious accessibility with emotional depth while showcasing Beethoven's growing artistic ambitions. Despite claiming to disdain commerce, Beethoven was remarkably shrewd in marketing his music. He promised publishers exclusive rights while simultaneously leveraging aristocratic connections through strategic dedications. The septet's popularity led to numerous arrangements for various instrumental combinations. By 1805, Beethoven had grown frustrated with the septet's enduring popularity as his style evolved toward more dramatic compositions. When praised for it in 1818, he retorted, "In those days, I did not know how to compose. Now I believe I do." This period marked his transition from music of natural feeling to more substantial art, coinciding with his adoption of systematic sketchbooks that enabled more ambitious musical structures. The Third Symphony evolved from French-inspired to deeply Viennese. Beethoven maintained complex politics, admiring revolutionary ideals while cultivating Austrian patronage amid censorship. Though rejecting Napoleon after his self-coronation, Beethoven remained fascinated by him, once boasting he could defeat Bonaparte if he understood warfare as well as music. Prince Lobkowitz paid 400 florins for 6 months' exclusive rights, transforming his palace room into a concert hall for the symphony's first rehearsal in 1804, a patronage model unavailable to Haydn or Mozart. Given its unprecedented length, Beethoven suggested performing it early in concerts. The symphony broke conventions while still employing sonata form. The first movement immediately destabilizes the home key with an alien C sharp, while multiple themes create the disjointedness early critics noted. Innovations included a massive development section with dissonant chords, a cumulus passage where violins tremble before the third horn's premature entry, and an extended coda functioning almost as a second development. The Eroica didn't merely push boundaries, it redefined the symphony itself. Despite his reputation as a solitary genius, Beethoven maintained important friendships throughout his life. His violin sonata Op. 47, the Kreutzer, exemplifies music as collaborative art. These fraternal relationships involved both arguments and reconciliations, with Beethoven writing emotional apologies that revealed his need for connection despite his difficult personality. A notable collaboration was with George Polgreen Bridgetower, a 24-year-old mixed-race violinist marketed as an African prince who arrived in Vienna in April 1803. Impressed by Bridgetower, Beethoven wrote a new sonata for his concert and performed without fee. When Bridgetower improvised a flourish matching the piano's cadenza during their unrehearsed performance, Beethoven exclaimed, "Noch einmal, mein lieber Bursch!" Once more, my dear fellow. In July 1812, Beethoven wrote the famous unsent immortal beloved letter, declaring, "My angel, my all, my very self." While scholars have proposed various recipients, including Countess Giulietta Guicciardi and Antonie Brentano, Austrian scholars make a compelling case for Josephine Brunswick, noting striking similarities between his letters to her and the immortal beloved letter. Beethoven's final string quartets, 1825-1826, shattered conventions with unusual structures and unprecedented musical language. While contemporaries attributed their revolutionary nature to illness, later generations recognized these works as profound innovations, both abstract and deeply personal. The Grosse Fugue finale of the Op. 130 quartet represents the ultimate expression of the fugue form, marked tanto libre, tanto recherche, partly free, partly learned. It alternates strict fugal passages with lyrical sections, employing extreme dynamics and dissonance that bewildered listeners. Critics compared it to Chinese language and Babylonian confusion. Despite deteriorating health and his nephew's suicide attempt in 1826, Beethoven found inspiration during his last autumn in the Danube Valley, which evoked his Rhineland childhood. He completed Op. 135 by mid-October before creating a more accessible finale for Op. 130. When Beethoven died in March 1827, crowds attended his funeral, with Franz Grillparzer eulogizing him as the last master of resounding song who had advanced the legacy of Bach, Handel, Haydn, and Mozart. Beethoven remains eternally relevant because he embodied human struggle against limitations. His music evolved from classical elegance to romantic expressiveness, transforming music from courtly entertainment to profound personal statement. In his hands, music became meaningful, expressing the full spectrum of human experience. When we listen to Beethoven, we hear humanity itself, struggling, overcoming, and triumphing. His legacy demonstrates that limitations can become strengths, conventions exist to be challenged, and the human spirit achieves immortality through art. In our fragmented world, his music offers both a mirror of our struggles and a vision of our potential for harmony and transcendence.